It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrich. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, rising mortgage rates might be cooling off a red-hot housing market, and some economists think we're now in a housing recession. We'll find out what that can mean for housing and housing costs here in Wisconsin. First, according to biologists, there have been 5 known mass extinction events in the history of life on Earth. The last one happened roughly 66 million years ago, when the dinosaurs were most likely wiped out by an asteroid. And it appears there's another one going on right now. The current mass extinction is unique in that its source is largely human activity. The UN Convention on Biological Diversity estimates that about 150 species die off each day, a number that can be difficult to wrap our heads around. Our next guest says there's something that can help us comprehend these extinctions. She takes a close look at the stories of endlings, a word used to mean the last individual left in a species, like Lonesome George, the last Pinta Island tortoise who died in 2012, and Benjamin, the Tasmanian tiger who died in 1933. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Is there an endangered species close to your heart? Do you think the current mass extinction can be stopped or slowed down? Have you visited the Passenger Pigeon Memorial here in Wisconsin? Have you done conservation work yourself? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Lydia Pine is a writer and historian. Her most recent book is Endlings, Fables for the Anthropocene. Lydia, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Endling was a new word to me, I got to say, Lydia, and it's pretty new in and of itself. Can you talk about the origins of this word, endling?
Sure. So, pardon me. So, as you pointed out, an endling is defined as the last known individual of a species before that species goes extinct. And the word sort of came into being around 1996 when biologists were doing conservation work, but also working with people who had come to understand that they were going to be the last of their family, and were looking for a word that would sort of have a poignancy about what it would be to be the end of something. And a couple of different words are tried out in the literatures, but endling is the one that sticks. It's really specific. It's really interesting, and it really piques a kind of curiosity, I think.
A big point of your book is that it matters how we talk about extinction and about these species and their last members. How does the word endling help do that, do you think?
So I think endling is a word that is really easy to gravitate toward. I joke that it took a long time when I was writing the book, it took a long time for Word to stop auto-correcting endling to ending. Mm-hmm. But I think that there's a real sort of crossover between endling and ending and sort of how we think about extinction and the ends of things. And I think endling is a word that gives us a character to build out extinction stories around.
You end the book, if you don't mind me spoiling your last line.
No, please.
Quoting here, we owe it to these endlings to tell their stories in as many words and narratives as possible. Why is that?
So when I was digging into the history of endlings and how we talk about these last of their species and these last survivors, I was really struck by how Western-centric these stories are, that we could find echoes of these stories in classic works like Beowulf or the King Arthur legend or all sorts of these sort of classic pieces of literature. And I wanted to, as part of this book, I wanted to be able to expand the kinds of literature and the kinds of words and the kinds of stories that we could use to talk about extinction and hopefully have a richer understanding of what loss means.
One practical hope, I think, for talking about these endlings, these last members of their species, would be, I guess, a cautionary tale. We have lots of those in the history of stories here. Something that tells us, hey, by the time it's gotten to this last one, it's too late, and maybe inspires us to care for other species. That's just one narrative. Is that an important one, though?
I think it is. I see these sort of cautionary tales. It feels like they almost function like an Aesop's Fables, like a modern Aesop's Fables, where these stories hopefully inspire a kind of lesson or sort of inspire us to be better humans or inspire us to consider these animals in their own stories. And I think that endlings are a way of putting that kind of character, putting a face, a persona onto something that's really abstract. So when you kicked off the segment, you pointed out that estimates put about 150 species a day going extinct. And I personally think that that's really hard to wrap my mind around, that that's a really, it's horrible, but it's very abstract. But when I dig into the story of Benjamin the Thylacine or Lonesome George the Galapagos tortoise, suddenly I feel like I have an understanding that simply statistics and numbers don't necessarily provide.
Talking to Lydia Pine about her new book. It's called Endlings, Fables for the Anthropocene. You can join in with your thoughts, your concerns about endangered species, your question for our guest about this concept of endlings, the last of a species. 800-642-1234 is the number to call if you'd like to join in. 800-642-1234. I want to meet some of the endlings. And you just mentioned one, Benjamin the Thylacine or Tasmanian tiger, some people call him. First of all, tell us a little bit about this species.
Sure. So the species, the thylacine, the Tasmanian tiger, I think in some literatures, they're also called Tasmanian wolves or hyenas, was a species that was common in Australia and Tasmania about 2 million years ago. And up through Europe, and it slowly goes extinct over the Australian mainland. And then by the time European settlers reach Tasmania, there are about 5,000 thylacines on the island of Tasmania. European settlers hunt the thylacine to extinction. It's really quite a vicious sort of extinction event in the 19th and early 20th century. And eventually, the last thylacine, the last known thylacine, is a captive thylacine that we've come to call Benjamin, who lived in a zoo in Hobart until he died in 1936 from exposure from the elements. It's really quite a tragic death to a sad extinction event.
Right. I got to say, in the storytelling here, and I'm putting human terms on an animal, which we do it, it seemed very undignified. Like the last member of the species was treated with very little dignity. Can you talk about that?
It feels oftentimes, I think, really cruel. And I think that it also helps us to really put actions and consequences together. Again, having a character or a persona or a specific individual, I think, helps us understand the actions and consequences in ways that I think are more abstract when we talk about bigger populations or species in general.
And Benjamin, I mean, the story that ends up being told about this thylacine, this Tasmanian tiger, first of all, he wasn't Benjamin. And I don't think, if I read right, he wasn't a he.
Yeah, so the debate is kind of open as to whether he is a he or whether whether he's called Benjamin at all. And historical records seem to point that while Benjamin was alive, he wasn't called Benjamin, and that this is sort of a myth, a story that gets built up in the years after Benjamin's death. And I think today it's impossible to talk about this individual without sort of having this myth, this story of Benjamin that gets built up after his death as part of that. And so one of the interesting parts, I think, about the story of Benjamin is how this last individual really spurs on conservation efforts in the late 20th century in Tasmania, in Australia. And Benjamin, such that he is, becomes this icon and this sort of focal point.
We're talking to Lydia Pine about her new book. It's called Endlings, Fables for the Anthropocene, about the stories of endlings, the last individuals of a species amid the Earth's sixth mass extinction. You can join in if you'd like at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about this current, what appears to be mass extinction? Do you think humans should do more to prevent the extinction of species? Is there a particular threatened species or one we've lost that you've been particularly interested in that you feel a connection to for one reason or another? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up the conversation with Lydia Pine, looking at her book, Endlings, Fables for the Anthropocene, about endlings, the word for the last living individual of a species that goes extinct, and how we think about them, how we tell their stories. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, maybe your examples, a species of particular concern to you if you want to bring it up. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org with your thoughts, your questions, maybe your own stories if you've worked on conservation. Let's bring on a caller now. Joshua is with us in Viroqua. Joshua, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to bring up, Joshua?
Yeah, so the late great passenger pigeons. Such an amazing story, and I was wondering if your guest writer had any stories about those endlings.
Joshua, thanks for the call. I don't think you have a chapter on the passenger pigeon. I don't know if we know about the last exact member of it. We've got, as I mentioned earlier, a memorial to the passenger pigeon, which once, I guess, filled the skies of North America and is now gone. Any thoughts, Lydia?
Sure. So Martha is actually the endling, the passenger pigeon endling. And there are many memorials to Martha and sort of marking this last of a species. What's really interesting, I think, about the story of Martha is that she's widely recognized, even at the point of her death and her species extinction, she's recognized as this last of her kind, but the word endling doesn't exist yet to be able to ascribe to her, to describe her. And so the endling part of her story, I think, is one that comes much later in the 20th century. A sort of interesting factoid about Martha that I learned when I was digging into endling stories is the zoo where Martha died actually had the last two Carolina parakeets, the endling and almost endling. They were called Incas and Lady Jane. And so... It's sort of an interesting coincidence that one place that's doing bird conservation work ends up with two last endlings.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Let's stay with birds for a moment. We had a parakeet in North America, in the United States, actually, a long time ago, the Carolina parakeet. Can you tell us about the story of what you call a charismatic endling?
I think that it is an incredibly charismatic endling and an incredibly charismatic bird. So as I mentioned, the last two endlings end up in the Cincinnati Zoo. They're Incas and Lady Jane, and they're purportedly devoted to each other. And in the tellings of these endling stories, Lady Jane dies first, and the zookeepers and conservators and curators all say that Incas had died of a broken heart and that's finally what finished him off. And I read these stories and I thought, oh my goodness, this just feels almost Arthurian in its telling, that you have this hero that's dying of a broken heart. And I felt like that was a really interesting way to think about and to frame this last Carolina parakeet.
Let's bring on another caller now at 800-642-1234. Bill is with us in Barneveld. Bill, hello.
Hi, great program. Taking my call. Preservation based here in the Salaw Foundation, which is working to save what's probably the most endangered large mammal in the world now, a thing called the Salaw. This looks kind of like an antelope. It was only discovered in Vietnam in 1992. You know, I get asked, you know, why are you guys trying to do this? I mean, there's not many of these things left. What's the point of saving this? And I just like to weigh in with an answer I often give, or my perspective is, people never ask, say, the curators at the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam, why are you doing this? Why are you saving Van Gogh's paintings? Well, they're saving because it's this beautiful thing, his paintings, these beautiful things in the world. And the world would be much less rich without them. And the same thing for the Salaw. It's this amazingly beautiful animal. And simply its beauty, that's enough reason for us. We don't have to make, ecosystem economic arguments to say that just having this animal in the world a bit longer even if we never get a chance to see it ourselves, makes the world a richer and better place.
So, Bill, thanks for that call. That's the Saola. I looked it up, S-A-O-L-A. What do you think of Bill's motivation, Lydia?
Oh, my goodness. That was so beautifully put. I really appreciated him sharing his experience, and I really liked the analogy that he offered. That was really fantastic.
Thanks for calling in, Bill, at 800-642-1234. Tony is with us now in Ann Arbor. Tony, hi.
Hey, how's it going? I think that there's really not a lot of debate that we are the most invasive species on Earth. And I think that with our presence, we've caused a lot of other species to die off, or endlings. And I think we're missing a great opportunity to redirect our focus instead of trying to save the planet from global climate change, that we should just give palliative care to the people that are here now and just let us go the way of the dinosaurs and let the Earth recover after she rids herself of us.
Tony, thanks for the call. Lydia, a very drastic solution, eliminate humans from the picture. I'm guessing, I don't know, I'm assuming you're not going to jump on board with that, but short of that, do you think there's more we could do?
I think that one of the points that I think Tony raised is really interesting, in that the sort of, how do we think about bearing responsibility? And in digging through endling stories and in digging through how we talk about extinction, I think that there's definitely space for humans to assume the blame for harm that we have caused.
Tony, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Lydia Pine is with us. We're talking about her new book. It's called Endlings, Fables for the Anthropocene. She looks at stories of the last members of species that have gone extinct and the stories we tell about them and why we tell them. Lydia, it seems to me this would be a tough project to do, right? I mean, I look at these stories and I honestly kind of want to look away. It's kind of painful and hard to confront. What kept you going to confront these stories?
It felt like, so I wrote the book during the pandemic, during the sort of first part of the pandemic, and it felt like a way to channel frustration. It felt like a way to talk about things that I felt were really hard. It felt like a way to talk about grief. But one of the other things that sort of inspired the project and spurred it on was reading a new translation of Beowulf by Maria Davanna Headley, who uses the word extinct in her translation to talk about what it is for this warrior to be the last person that survives this battle. And that moment was such an inspiration in what could literature tell us about thinking about loss and grief and the last of their kind, that I really wanted to find ways to explore that with non-human species.
Now, not all non-human species are, I guess, photogenic or charismatic. Can you make the case that we should be thinking about the other species that may not tug at our heartstrings, that may not have that sympathetic story?
Yeah, so I can actually offer like a personal experience that was a really humbling one when I put it together. So in the book, I talk about a plant called a woods cycad. It looks sort of like a palm tree. They're not palm trees, but they look kind of like palm trees. And there's only one plant, only one of wood cycad that's in the world. But because it's a clone, there are several copies of it in various botanical gardens around the world. And I realized when I was tracking down sort of at each point, where would these individuals be, these multiple endlings, where would they be? And I realized I had actually seen one in person and hadn't realized it. And it was such a humbling, experience to think, wow, because this isn't a charismatic rhinoceros or it's not a charismatic megafauna, I didn't put it together, what I was seeing, the enormity of what I was seeing. And that to me was a really sobering way of understanding the role that charisma can have in species that we care about and what species stories we talk about.
Time for one more caller. Willie is with us on the line in Madison. Willie, hi.
Hi. Years ago, it was probably in the 70s, I was at the Field Museum of Natural History in Chicago. There I saw a stuffed whooping crane, and the little caption on the bird said, "There are only about 15 of the individuals of this species remaining, and the species will most certainly go extinct within the next few decades." Well, interestingly enough, I flew an airplane down to the little airport on the lake in downtown Chicago, and I flew back, and on my way flying back, I saw a flock of cranes with a few whooping cranes in it. And I realized that, you know, they talked about down to 15 in the species number at that time, and that it would go extinct. It did not.
Willie, thanks for the call. We don't have a lot of time left. Wisconsin, Baraboo, Wisconsin, the International Crane Foundation, a big part of whooping crane revival efforts. Lydia, Willie pointed toward a case where we came back from the brink.
I love that. It sort of offers, I think, a balance to the sadness, the trauma, and the grief that we often associate with endlings and with extinction. It's exciting to hear of success stories, I think.
Thanks for that call, Willie and Lydia. We'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
Lydia Pine is a writer and historian. She talked with us about her most recent book. It's called Endlings, Fables for the Anthropocene, about the last living individuals of a species and how we talk about them, how we tell their stories. Still time for you to share your thoughts. If you have experiences like some of our other callers, email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org.